Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 43 of the Book Wars Pod. I'm Kate, and I'm here with Kristen, and today we are going to be discussing chapters 10 through 17 of Aftermath by Chuck Wendig. But before that, I need people to talk about what they're drinking so I can sit in the corner and laugh to myself, because literally, like, 10 seconds ago, Chris and I just got some hot gossip about people we know personally, like, not on Twitter, not the Star Wars fandom, just people who are ridiculous, and now I have to go laugh about it.
So much tea.
Speaking of tea, Kate and I are drinking hot toddies with Hendrick's gin.
Ooh, that sounds lovely.
They're quite good, yes, as Kate is still crying in the background.
Do you just put normal hot toddy stuff in there and then just gin instead of bourbon or
these are actually whiskey? Kind of bootleg hot toddies because they're just tea and gin.
You could put honey in it if you wanted.
That's fine. I was just asking. I was just gathering information.
No. I mean,
I hear you judging me, Keeks. It's fine.
I meant that Chris could put honey in it if he wanted to, but
this is true. No, like, honey needed for Kate.
I like my drinks to be dark and bitter like my soul, and so here we are.
I don't add sweetener to anything either. Like, Quinn made, what did he make? Those mint things that aren't mint juleps, the other ones, with rum. What are they called? Sorry. If you
mojitos?
Can't tell.
Yes.
Thank you, mojitos. If you can't tell, I am going to be even more out of it than usual today. I am very sick. I've been sick all week. I've finally been diagnosed correctly today. So, after this, I will go pick up more drugs, and things will get better. But right now, I'm just in a daze. Yeah, but yes, mojitos. And
Sure you weren't just diagnosed with a lack of enthusiasm and unlistenability?
Oh my god,
that is true as well. Thank you, Chris. But he was like, "Oh, I need to make these sweeter next time." I was like, "Please don't. They're so good. Make it bitter. I love it. I want it to be bitter and sour." He was like, "Okay, you fucking weirdo." I am drinking bootleg emergency from Whole Foods. I think it's called Vitamin C Beverage. Fizzy Vitamin C Beverage.
Wow.
Flavor orange. I'm drinking an Italian sparkling mineral water because I'm so tired of drinking regular water that I've just stopped doing it, so I had to do it with something else. And some, like, what kind of tea is this? Bigelow lemon ginger.
Ooh, that's good shit.
Yeah, it is good for throat.
Also, Kristen is literally just like lying on her deathbed right now, just being a trooper and doing the pod for y'all, so
believe me, I really wanted to do it because I haven't been doing anything all week because I like haven't been able to because I have an ailment which makes me tired from doing nothing, so this is a great adventure. This is my great adventure of the week, other than going to the doctor 15 times, three
Lovely.
Times, whatever, it's fine.
15 divided by 5.
Exactly.
Look, guys, I did math.
Look at her math right over there. Hey, Kate, do you want to talk about Star Wars?
Oh, yeah, let's do that. I'm sorry. I'm still laughing about my personal life. It's fine.
You're allowed to do that.
It's fine. If you don't follow me on Twitter already and know that I'm the living embodiment of a salt pillar, now you know. Anyway.
You should follow her.
Hello.
Great follow.
It's Lou_Satania, if you would like to do that. Also, I just want to say that the reason why I made tea is because I'm about to fall asleep, so this is going to be a lovely, splendiferous episode of the podcast. Anyway,
I'm great. Thanks for asking, everyone.
Nobody asked you.
Our listeners were asking. No, they weren't. Shannon was asking.
Oh, Shannon, stop. You're so kind, but stop encouraging him.
Shout out to friend of the pod at ChaneyJoy26. All right, the goddamn Star Wars. So we haven't yet talked in any great depth or really at all about Jess Amari, who is, of course, the Zabrak bounty hunter. And she's a really interesting character just because She's one of those bounty hunters that appears to have somewhat of a moral compass, even though she did used to work for the Empire. She seems like she pretty much jumped at the chance straight away as soon as she possibly could to work for the New Republic. And of course, a little bit of that was the way the wind was blowing in terms of money. But I kind of wonder if part of it, like a more, perhaps a little bit more of a significant part of it is because then she wouldn't be working for the bad guys anymore. Well, anyway, so the question I have for y'all is, you know, what do we take to be the nature of a bounty hunter? And by that, I mean, what kind of person becomes a bounty hunter? Can we ever trust bounty hunters? And, you know, we have a lot of examples throughout pretty much all of the canon of various kinds of bounty hunters. So let's talk about that profession.
It's, I know that Boba Fett likes to disintegrate people.
That's sure
a fact
is true.
That's a fact about bounty hunters that I have.
That's correct. There's also Cad Bane, your other blue boyfriend.
Oh yeah, my other blue. He's a really good bounty hunter.
In spite of himself.
He is a great bounty hunter.
Yeah, until Boba killed him.
I know, right?
Aww. Chris.
Yeah, I mean, opinions on bounty hunters.
I mean, I feel like the number one thing that we get from Jess is that she's self-interested, right? Like, she's in a galaxy that is very often so just, like, good and evil-centric. She is the one who's looking out for number one at all times. And it's interesting to see if that kind of remains to be the case as we get more development from her. But my question was, is she kind of your average bounty hunter? Like, I don't know. Like, is she... How do we compare her to, like, somebody like Boba or Jango Fett? Like, is she... Because the fact that she, like, is, you know, working for the New Republic... Like, bounty hunters are traditionally considered to be the evil guys, right? Like, even under the Republic, like, they were considered to be, like, you know, the ones the Geonosians don't trust and, like, shit like that. So, like, it's... She seems... Even from the start, like, she seems somewhat good-hearted for a bounty hunter.
So, I accidentally stumbled upon what I think is a minor spoiler about her personal history, and I don't know if I should talk about that right now or not.
Just talk about it. We can edit it out if Chris says it's too important to keep.
Okay. So when I was reading it, like I said, we have a long history of examples of bounty hunters throughout the Star Wars canon. And so I was thinking of the Zabark bounty hunter we see in the Clone Wars, Sugi, who is one of the bounty hunters that the Lurmen hire to guard their village. They're the little lemur guys who are, I think it's the Lurmen, who are about to get taken over. And they're guarding their village, or maybe it's some other species of...
I honestly totally forgot that was in the Clone Wars.
Oh, well, it might be some other species. Anyway, apparently Sugi is... Jess's aunt, and that's how she got into bounty hunting. And I, knowing that, didn't surprise me the slightest, honestly, because it's Star Wars and everything connects in some manner, but also because her philosophy on bounty hunting definitely seems to be one of those things she inherited from her aunt. Like, she definitely feels like, you know, this is her job, and she does what she has to survive, and she takes the job she needs to, even if it's, you know, other people's dirty work, because that's what pays money. But at the end of the day, there's something in her that is just, like, at its core, really decent, and I'm interested to see more about that, because, like, Chris, like you were saying, most of the bounty hunters that we find in Star Wars are just, I mean, there's just a bunch of scummy people. You have people like Boba Fett, who kind of just kills people because he's an angry person with a horrible childhood. Or, you know, you mentioned Ventress here on the outline. She kind of took up bounty hunting for lack of anything to do. She was kind of like depression bounty hunting.
God, so real.
I know. And, you know, Sabine.
Oh my god.
And I mean, like, if you think about, like, Sabine was a bounty hunter because, you know, it was she had a lot of anger in her, and it, you know, and before the Siege of Mandalore and after she left the Order, Ahsoka also was a bounty hunter, because that's kind of...
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, because that's kind of what her skill set was. So, yeah,
Did I know that? Was that in the Ahsoka book?
No, but Filoni talked about it during that Ahsoka panel that made everybody cry.
Oh, great. Thank you.
You're welcome. That was during Star Wars Celebration in 2017, I think. Right, Chris?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry, I'm Instagramming for the pod. That's all.
Oh, my God.
You could wait until after to do it, Chris. It's amazing.
No, because Instagram's still going to be there. Recording, so now I'm going to Insta while we record.
Oh, God.
How are fans going to know this quality content when they listen to this episode in 5 days?
I really hate you.
I'm going to cough on you next time I see you.
Oh, my God.
Hopefully you won't have pneumonia by then.
Anyway, so the reason why I wanted to talk about, like, what kind of a person becomes a bounty hunter is because we actually do get a really wide range of people who take this up as a profession for, you know, for as, you know, a permanent job or, you know, something to do to make money while they're, I don't know, running around the galaxy being emo and shit. So, this is something that I was really interested in discussing. It just seems like one of those jobs where it's just like, you know, when people have nothing better to do, so they, like, I don't know, work at the supermarket and bag groceries, except with more dying and blasters and pew-pew, I don't know.
So much pew-pew. Maybe we can talk about this more on the wrap-up, because I think, you know, there's a lot to talk about here with bounty hunters, like, philosophically, because what just came to mind for me when you were talking was, like, well, what makes someone a bounty hunter? Is it, like, them calling themselves a bounty hunter? Or, like, what? Because, like, if we really water it down, is it just somebody who does stuff that other people want them to do for money? Because then, like, there are a lot of bounty hunters. But I don't know. Can we bring that back up for the wrap-up? We can talk a little bit more about, like, the philosophical nature of bounty hunting and how it kind of has changed throughout the Star Wars. Plus, especially, Jass is a really interesting example, I think, because we see her right after the fall of the Empire. Quote.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's more to talk about there, and I'm not sure we get it in this book, but certainly in the future we'll get more about that.
Okay. I just wanted to talk about her, like, at all, because
yeah.
We did.
Cool. Oh no, I know.
So never mind, I guess.
No, I
don't know. I feel like I did a lot of talking.
No, you did. That was great, Kate. I just didn't think that this was particularly the greatest point to be like, while we're talking about Jess, let's wax poetic about what the fuck bounty hunters are. It's a much more wrap-up-y topic, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. I'm trying to wrap my head around, like, what kind of a person she is. Because you see her interacting with Sinjir, and she's just like, I'm helping you escape because you're useful. And, like, is she being truthful about that, is my question? Or would she have rescued him anyway if he were, like, a useless lump?
I don't think she knows, either.
Ah.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Because I think she's like, I absolutely would not. I think she's telling herself that if he was not potentially useful, she would totally leave him. But I don't quite believe that.
Okay. But, and you know what? That honestly says a lot in and of itself. So, cool.
Sorry, we missed your question. Now I understand why you were frustrated. Understood.
Hi.
Well, since we are talking about bounty hunters who used to work for the Empire, let's talk about the used-to-be Empire and this shady-ass meeting that all these hoes are having. I think Kate had some jumping-off points for us about this, as she does.
I have so many discussion questions, guys. I'm not going to lie. You know, the second quarter of this book is awesome, don't get me wrong, but it's, you know, it's super plot heavy, and I gotta wait to see where a lot of these storylines go before I have questions about them, I guess, because the questions I have now are what's gonna happen next, which is great, but also not great for a podcast of this nature. No. But anyway, so I guess a lot of my questions are just surrounding this fucking evil League of Evil meeting that they're having on Akiva. And so I just wanted to, obviously, we're going to get more of this in the next two books in the Aftermath trilogy, but I wanted to start talking about what direct lines we can draw between things that are happening right now in Aftermath and the results of those things or the seeds that were planted that we see then in Bloodline by Claudia Gray, which we discussed in our episodes 4 through 8, and it gives us a lot of information about the politics of the New Republic and the failings of the New Republic and the rise of the First Order. And of course, all of that begins right here, kind of, in this meeting.
I like how we've all just memorized what episodes we talked about Bloodline, because it just, like, relates back to everything.
This Claudia Gray's a fucking genius, y'all.
This is true.
Yeah, she is. I think that might be the only one that I know. So.
Also fair.
But it's a good one to know.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I think you can really see the beginnings of, even just on the Imperial side, is kind of this idea of the centrists versus the populists, and these, you know, strong centralized military power versus, you know, go away and leave us alone and let's, you know, go to the other side of the galaxy and call a truce. Like, you kind of see these. I mean, obviously, everybody in this meeting is Imperial, and so it makes it more difficult to, you know, say, oh, there were populists, because the whole point of the centrists is they're the Imperials. But you have these two, these differences of opinion even within the Imperial holdouts. And so it shows you, like, how there's a spectrum of ideology that reflects the later schism between the centrists and the populists, and between the Republic and the First Order.
I was kind of doing a dark chuckle to myself, just thinking about this concept that the Imperial would just go to the Outer Rim, and they would just, you know, hang out in the Outer Rim and have their own little sector, and then the New Republic would have the rest of it. Because I was just like, and why don't you just build a space wall, you know?
We don't want to build space walls. We want to build space bridges.
Oh my god.
God damn it.
Just saying.
So true. So true, Kristen.
It's important to understand those we don't relate to, or that's, something.
That's via space bridges.
That's yep. That's great. And I know that, well, this sort of leads Kiki into a point you wanted to talk about, which is how this connects to the First Order. Of course, a whole other idea that people have, apart from hang out in just in the Outer Rim or try to reconquer the galaxy, is to just, you know, go to the far reaches of space. Like, maybe, oh, I don't know, the unknown regions, and just lie low and not get all the rest of their ships exploded, etc.
And just, like, build a huge, huge army.
Yeah.
Yeah, if only that idea had gone anywhere.
Oh, my God. And then make just, like, a couple movies about it. So, I mean, I wrote on this outline, this is mostly because I don't understand, like, the timeline. But where does this fit in to what we know about that timeline? Because I know the timeline of what, like, the First Order being created is fuzzy in Bloodline to begin with. Like, we see it at not, like, its nascency. We see it at, like, this later stage where there's all this shit and they're already, like, organized and whatnot. So can someone who knows the timeline and can tell me what else we know about the First Order tell me, how does this fit in?
Yeah, so I don't think it's a spoiler to say that Empire's End, which is the third book of the Aftermath trilogy, focuses on the Battle of Jakku. And the Battle of Jakku, which we know this from other materials, not just Aftermath, is where it was the final battle of the war, essentially. The final big battle of the war. The battle where the Empire truly lost and just was soundly defeated. Oh, we know this from Lost Stars. Okay, good. The Empire was, like, really soundly defeated, and the New Republic won once and for all. What we find out is, and I don't think any of this is spoilery, because I think it's just common knowledge, but the First Order rose out of the Imperial remnant after the Battle of Jakku.
Because my understanding about what happened there is that basically when the Empire was retreating, they just all fucked off to the unknown regions, and that became the First Order.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The survivors.
Yes, okay. That is what we know. Like, after Jakku, the survivors fled. Exactly.
So, would it be fair to say that basically the seeds for the Amexines and that the shadow government that was supporting them, that essentially starts pretty immediately after Empire's End?
I think it's entirely possible. Okay. I don't think we know exactly in terms of, you know, the specific tactics like the Amaxines, but certainly the governance structure.
That's what I mean.
Of that the First Order.
Basically, if we can point to in the timeline where the First Order starts, it's there.
Yes.
Okay. Does that help, Geeks? Is that your question?
It does help. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, because I knew we had information about it, but I was like, I don't know where that fits in here.
Yeah, and so that's about 6 months from now. So this is about 6 months before that.
I was going to say super pre-First Order, but just 6 months before.
6 months, maybe 8 months. It's hard to tell.
Well, yeah, thank you. That's helpful.
Cool.
And then one other thing that I was really struck by our interlude on Chandrilla was it wasn't this meeting with the Imperials, but you see the Senate already struggling to keep order in the galaxy. Like, you have the one Zan, I think was his species, who is throwing rotten fruit at Ulia Choco because his colony has been taken over by pirates. And the Senate's not doing anything because the Senate can't do anything.
And what a horrible echo we already have of the beginning of Bloodline, where the senator from Ryloth has come to the Senate because they can't do any trading because there are fucking pirates all up in their shit.
So many pirates.
Yeah, so it's... Kristen's like, I want to live in this world.
I'm a pirate. I'm a pirate. Hi, Hondo.
I love Hondo. Anyway, continue.
But no, it just... A point of view that we don't get that often is how could anybody support the Empire besides just being evil? And I think we are getting that view here. And you support the... Like, yes, the Empire was terrible, but when you're not under the Empire's oppression and it's harder to remember it, and all you're remembering is the immediate, I am, like, getting robbed and no one is stopping it, then it's natural to some extent to want more order. And that's... what, even at its strongest and, I wouldn't say most powerful, because it's still a very nascent government, but at a high point, certainly, in the existence of the New Republic, in that they've, you know, taken control of the galaxy, for the most part, still can't control and do anything about.
Right, and we've gotten in other books, like Lost Stars, especially, or Inferno Squad, this idea that the Empire provides order, and that if you are on the side of rebellion, you're on the side of chaos and lawlessness. And, you know, part of that obviously is a propaganda line. You read it, and of course, you know, we know Star Wars, so, you know, you're reading through it, and you're like, yeah, okay, whatever, like, fucking Empire, this is not real, and it's not worth it. But you really do see, through that interlude, what that actually concretely means for, you know, quote unquote normal people, you know, just on the ground, like when you're just a cog in the machine, there is a kind of, you know, routine and, you know, structure to your life that people, I think, kind of find comforting. It's kind of like, we've talked a little bit, I think we were reading Lost Stars, how, Thane, when he's part of the Imperial military, he has a schedule and he knows exactly what he's going to do day after day. And then he defects in those first few weeks. He's just like, you know, sleeping till 3 o'clock in the afternoon, doesn't know what to do with himself, sort of thing.
Can't relate.
Doesn't sound like depression at all. But, you know, just... to take that as a metaphor for the rest of the galaxy, that's kind of what's happening to a lot of these worlds now, a lot of these places that didn't really see a lot of, you know, actual, I don't want to say law and order, because, but, you know, that sort of thing, under the old Republic.
Order and law.
Yes, that's definitely better. Fuck. Under the old Republic, and then they did get a semblance of that under the Empire, now they're back to this lawlessness where there's just fucking pirates everywhere, like... Yeah, no, doesn't feel great, does it?
Yeah, I hate to bring up the prequels, but the prequels. We what?
No, I'm kidding.
Oh, I hate to bring up the prequels, but sorry, I am really having a hard time understanding sarcasm and any sort of nuance the last few days for probably obvious reasons. But this is not the first time this has happened. Min's like, I'm making a joke, and I'm like, what?
Oh my god.
Are you okay?
Oh my god.
Oh my god. I'm a crazy person. Anyway, my brain is being liquefied in my head is what I'm saying. But like, I mean, like, it did not make for a great movie, but we see how, like, ineffectual the Senate is in those movies, and it does not, I mean, from what we know from Bloodline, it does not seem like there has been that much of a change between what we see in the prequels as far as, like, government and order and procedure is concerned, to, you know, what ends up being set up under the New Republic. And I mean, like, you know, we live in the United States. We are very familiar with a government that likes to sit on its hands and do nothing. But this is somehow worse. They seem to be doing, like, you know,
I know,
they seem to be doing absolutely nothing.
The fuck is this, Europe?
when the stuff seems to be kind of burning down around them for kind of lack of a more subtle thing to say.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, that it's important to call out that it's like, remember when it didn't work over here? We're going to do the same thing. It's still not working. It's so crazy.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely true.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because that's something that we don't really talk about until really The Last Jedi is this desire to reinstitute, or I don't want to use reinstitute, this desire to
institutions.
Yes, this desire to replace institutions that had failed.
To revive,
thank you. This desire to revive failed institutions. And, you know, we have, obviously, hindsight's 2020, and we know that the New Republic failed. But Luke is right when he says in The Last Jedi about the Jedi that they allowed Darth Sidious to rise. And the Republic allowed Emperor Palpatine to rise. And obviously those two were connected, but, like, Emperor Palpatine, I mean, maybe you could have, because he was a Sith Lord, but theoretically would have had a lot more trouble taking control of a strong government, or of, like, a functioning government. He took control of it because it failed and people wanted change.
Yeah, definitely. Right. I mean, I think sorry.
I was just gonna tack one thing on, and the New Republic allowed the First Order to rise. Like,
totally.
It's the same thing.
Absolutely. And I mean, isn't that the truest thing? I mean, we see throughout history the way just this horrible slippery slope of just letting things go. Just and then, like, the other thing is that, like, people want, they, you know, the easiest thing to fall back on is the thing that's familiar, except, of course, that's where the mistake lies.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't wait to talk more about this in the wrap-up. I'm like, let's talk about all these institutions we want to overhaul, except for this is not an appropriate place to do that.
I'll be really interested to know if they delve into this at all in episode 9 when it comes out. Or if, you know, I feel like they won't, but the post episode 9 books will likely.
Or, I mean, Star Wars Resistance is trademarked.
That's true.
That'd be cool if they actually did something with that that was more meaningful than fucking Ahsoka as Gandalf. But, you know, whatever, la 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 la.
Yeah, give me more information about the inner workings of the government, which is why the prequels didn't work, probably the most, and bad storytelling, and. But,
I'm of the belief that the prequels issue was not that they were too wonky, it's that they were badly written.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, yeah. They're, I mean, what fucking movies win goddamn Oscars every year? It's the ones that are, like, basically, it should be the most boring thing ever, like, sitting in an office, like, fucking whapping at a typewriter. Like,
yeah. Nobody wants to watch Space C-SPAN, George Lucas.
Yeah, it's just that, like, because I really, like, it's funny, because, like, everybody makes fun of The Phantom Menace, Crawl, like, The taxation of outlying star of outlying trade routes or of trade routes to outlying star systems or whatever. And it's, like, super wonky, and, like, it kind of does lose you from the beginning. But at the same time, like, if you go back and watch that movie, the plot isn't what makes it difficult to follow. And certainly, Attack of the Clones, the problem is not the politics of it.
Oh my god.
The problem, and look, prequel defenders, I like the prequels, don't at me. But they're not well written. Particularly Attack of the Clones. And Attack of the Clones has some really interesting political stuff going on, in that Palpatine is like tricking Jar Jar into being a puppet, essentially, because Jar Jar trusts him because he's from his planet and he's been nice to him. And you have the debate over the creation of the Grand Army of the Republic, and all this is happening, and we just don't get any of it because it's poorly written, not because it's too complicated.
Or even in that tension between Anakin and Padme, where they have these different ideas of what government should be, and that's really interesting, except, you know, instead of doing that, they're, you know, Anakin's riding a fucking space potato, so I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's absolutely.
Anyway.
That has been prequel talk.
Anyway. Moving a little bit backwards, I guess. I'm going to ask one of these questions that has no answer, because they're my favorite, as you know. But the way that Rae Sloane kind of distills the debate going on between all of these players who are left in Imperial leadership is that they have five options for what to do with themselves, in light of the fact that they basically lost the New Republic. And that's truce, money, surrender, cold war, hot war. And my question is, which of those is the right option, the best option? Does such a thing exist? Is it some combination of those things? And of course, I think, Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, but Sloane's idea is basically the thing that ends up happening is to just fuck off to the unknown regions and regroup, yeah?
I'm not sure we know what Sloane wants, do we?
Maybe I made that up.
I mean, I don't think you're wrong to ascribe that to her.
Okay.
Because it, to your question about what's the right decision, I think that's the one that offers the best chance of success at this point. And obviously we know that playing the long game, it worked.
I mean, as it always does in Star Wars, apparently.
Yeah, right. But it's interesting because I don't know that we know what she wants. I don't know that she knows what she wants other than she wants to be in charge of the Empire, you know?
Hmm. Okay.
That's something, though, being in charge of the Empire.
Hell yeah.
Like, we know she doesn't want a hot war.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it's stupid. She
knows and she knows they don't have the resources to do that anymore.
Totally.
Yeah.
But Kate, you raised some, was it you? I can't see what color this is. I'm blind.
It's Chris.
Sorry. It's blue. Chris raised these. Sorry. Oh my god.
Oh. Yeah, I can talk about this.
Control Z.
I mean, I think another interesting question to bring up is who would other, you know, historical figures in the Empire have agreed with? Who would Vader have agreed with, and Palpatine?
Historical figures. God,
historical figures.
I said Palpatine would have voted for a third Death Star.
Probs.
Vader might have, too.
Legit.
I mean,
oh my god, these fucking dudes and their fucking Death Stars.
I mean, it really has just turned into a fucking Death Star dick measuring contest. Like, I mean, it's Anakin, right? He's just like, let's just make it go boom.
Bigger, bigger, bigger.
Yeah. Vader, I think, absolutely would have voted for a hot war.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, in Anakin's defense, that's what he knows. He grew up with that during his more formative years.
That's true.
It's what he knows. It's what he's familiar with. It's what he's probably most comfortable with.
And he's definitely good at it.
That is. Yeah, sure is.
Yeah.
Pew, pew. Lightsabers.
Vroom. But you have Snoke on here too, Chris.
I have Snoke on here.
For what purpose? Because he didn't really have a say in this debate.
He did not. But I think it's interesting because looking at the history of the First Order, it's pretty clear that he would have said, go hide. He would have said, you know, run and hide.
Sure. But he has no bearing on this conversation right now.
No, he doesn't. But it's just interesting to think about the differences between the Imperial mindset and the First Order mindset.
Got it.
Yeah.
And
when
how the Imperials are all very hot war focused, and Snoke, who in this scenario represents the First Order, is more calculating.
That's fair enough.
Do we know when Snoke comes into the picture?
We do not know.
Sounds like you guys know something that I don't know.
I really don't.
No one knows.
I know. Okay. No one knows anything. Great.
It's sometime in between this and Bloodline.
Oh, okay.
You know,
narrows it down a bit.
Just a few years. decades, whatever. Can we talk more about Sloan?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. Okay, great. So, obviously, why are you just slamming cups around, Christopher?
Sorry, I didn't mean to.
Jesus Christ, get it under control. What is making you angry? Who hurt you, Chris?
Oh, boy.
It's okay. It's Friday. You can hug the hamster later. It's going to be okay.
Oh, Hamlet.
He was so cute. He was, like, cuddled up. I say New Pickers Geeks, I think. He just cuddled up next to us during basketball like a tiny dog. He was just taking a nap.
He just loves to be warm and snuggled.
He does. All right. Sloan. So, obviously, we're getting this whole debate from Sloan's perspective. And she's kind of sitting there, not saying too much, except when... It's Pandion, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just, like, fucking adding her because he's a dick.
Is that the Grand Moff?
Yeah. The one who's just like, well, why don't you use your Super Star Destroyer?
Yeah.
Asshole. Anyway.
Because they lost like 3 Super Star Destroyers at Endor.
I mean, he's a fucking idiot, but anyway. So she's kind of sitting there and absorbing all of the conversation. And Chris, I think what you're saying about her not being quite sure where she's landing is true, because I think she's still kind of synthesizing information and crunching the numbers. And I think her conversation with Wedge really shows that, like, she's still trying to figure it out a little bit. Anyway.
Yeah, I think she's very much trying not to lose this conversation.
Totally.
At start. She's coming from a very defensive place and waiting for them to pick each other off.
Totally. But besides the fact that she's the best, why do you think she thinks she's best positioned to save the Empire? Is it just because she thinks she's the best? Which is, like, a perfectly acceptable answer for me. But I'm just wondering if there's something more to it. Like, does she want to save the Empire to save the Empire? Does she want to save the Empire because she wants the power that the Empire would lend if only she were given that power so she could build it back up? Is it a mix of those things? Is it something else?
I wrote on the outline, oh my god, because everyone else is hot trash.
correct.
But, I mean, which is true, but I think I have an actual point around this, which is, I think she's the only one, from her point of view, that has, like, the Empire's best interests at heart. Like, I think she sees herself, like, all of these other people that are kind of all around her are, like, kind of... It's funny because this also makes her look power hungry and self-centered, but everybody around her is like, no, listen to me. I am the one that has the money. No, listen to me. I have military experience, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, no, we should, like, this should be the Empire. But she's not, like, being so tunnel visioned about it. Like, she is accepting all of this input, whether or not she likes it. And I think, I mean, from what we've seen in the book and then, like, continue to see, I think, after these chapters, is, like, she wants the Empire to flourish again. And she doesn't quite know what that looks like, but she sure as fuck doesn't trust any of these other hoes to do that correctly.
But does she want that for her, or does she want it for the Empire's sake, because she believes in the Empire?
I think she wants it for the Empire's sake, but I don't think she wants it for the Empire's sake because she believes in the Empire.
Okay.
I think she wants it for the Empire's sake because she truly believes that that's what will bring peace to the galaxy.
Interesting.
So how does that... I'm going off outline. How does that differ from the Rey Sloan that we saw at the end of A New Dawn?
She was just... Her whole goal was just to climb up that Imperial ladder. That's all she... I mean... Keeks, you're talking about tunnel vision. I mean, I think that's what she had when she was younger. The way that, she was felt very proud of herself. Not that she shouldn't have, but there was, oh gosh, what is that short story, Chris, in Rise of the Empire, with Tarkin and Vidian and the armor factory that we discussed.
It's something, it's called like supply line or something like that.
Yes. Anyway, it's the second out of three short stories in the Rise of the Empire compilation, which contains both Tarkin by James Luceno and A New Dawn by John Jackson Miller. And that's actually the first time that in that short story, it's the first time in the Kanan timeline that we see Rae Sloane, and she's just been promoted, and that's when Tarkin assigns her to Count Vidian's ship, and that's how she meets Vidian. But she comes into Tarkin's office, and he's been somewhat of a mentor for her, and she is really proud of herself for you know, being promoted so at a relatively young age, and he kind of like knocks her down a peg, like, you know, don't be too proud of yourself yet. Like, you know,
we're all using each other over here.
Right, exactly. Like, what, that way lies complete fucking disaster. And like, I mean, who better to personify those parts of the Empire than Tarkin himself, right? But she's with Tarkin as a mentor, she's definitely super, super focused on that, I think. And she's trying to make all these connections with Baron Dantha and A New Dawn and all the lessons that she's learned from Count Vidian, especially from his failings in that novel. She's, you know, she's super smart, obviously, and she's really trying to synthesize all that knowledge so that she can come out on top. And obviously somewhere along the line that backfired for her, and we see her in the position that she's at in Aftermath. And I think that's really humbled her in a lot of ways, which is kind of a weird word for me to be using with her, because like that's not who she is, but she's definitely a lot smarter, it, like, just practically. Like, it's like when you first start a job and you don't know how an office environment is, and then you work at a place, in an office for a while, and you find out it's just, like, high school, and you have to play those, like, petty, like, people politics. That's basically Rae Sloane.
Yeah, I think she's changed a lot. I mean, I think Kate just said it succinctly and very well, but yeah, I mean, I think there's so much in Rae that's changed, because I think, in a lot of ways, Rae's tied herself to the Empire in so many ways. Mm-hmm. And obviously the Empire is much different from the last time we saw it, in that it exploded a bunch and whatnot. I think that's kind of like, I think she's tethered her, like, I don't think that she's totally unique in this, but I think she's tethered her purpose and her meaning and everything else about her kind of to the Empire. Which is exactly what the Empire wants, right? That's what they teach you. And that's why I think she's trying to keep it together. I mean, I think that kind of connects to my point before about why I think she, you know, wants the Empire to flourish once again. I think because she doesn't know what's going to happen if that doesn't happen, because she's never known another life.
I think that's fair. And I think that's, I mean, I think that's true, just because I think it's true in real life. I think you see that kind of thinking in a lot of career military people, definitely. But Chris, I know you had a question about what it means in practicality if Sloane gets everything she wants.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, and this is why I wonder what she does want, because why does she think that she can actually keep it all together? Like, you know, if once the Empire's saved, like, you know, if they say they win the war, like, say they have this amazing, you know, turn of fate and they win the war, like, all these idiots are still going to be around. Like, all these people that she hates and they're going to be trying to backstab her at every turn. Like, so, I don't know. This is, like, I wonder what she does actually want. Maybe she, you know, does want to go hide in the unknown regions because it's easier to control there, because you have a common enemy and the war is never won. And you can always just be working toward that singular goal. But I don't know. It's interesting. It's interesting to see how that plays into her motivations.
I mean, from my perspective, I think the reason why she thinks that she can hold it all together is because she knows she's smarter than the rest of these people. She knows that she's had the practical life knowledge of, you know, being on top, as it were, for, you know, how old she was in her rank in the Imperial Navy. She knows what that life is. She knows what it's like to be taken down. And I really hope we get that story. And so, like, she knows how this machine works. She knows it inside and out now. She knows like, the dirty guts of it and the shiny parts of it, too, commanding a Star Destroyer. I'm gonna use a term that our friend at Chaos Bria coined a while ago. She's a capable lady, and she knows that about herself. And I think that is why she thinks, like, she can control these literal goddamn idiots.
Mm-hmm. Hashtag capable lady.
Mm-hmm.
Kate, I know you wanted to talk about some military toys.
I sure do, guys. So we know, especially from the past season of Star Wars Rebels, that at one point in the Empire, it was a debate between what would be the best weapon against the Rebellion. Was it going to be the Death Star, which of course was Krennic and Vader's baby, or was it going to be Thrawn's TIE Defender? And obviously the Death Star won out, especially because Thrawn's TIE Defender factory kind of literally went up in smoke, but whatever. R.I.P. Kanan. But my question is, and, you know, we can talk about this till the cows come home, and I think we've talked about this a little bit on the pod before, but if only the Empire hadn't put all of... I wrote, could the Empire have won if it hadn't put all of its eggs in one egg twice?
So many eggs.
I know, like, literally threw all its resources into the Death Star. It got blown up because of one, like, you know, that one glitch in it. Okay, which, like, okay, fine, you found out about it, you can build a second one, so it doesn't do that. But no, they put it back into, they put the Death Star 2 back into battle, and it wasn't even finished yet. Like, what the hell?
Yeah, just a lot of hubris.
Right. And, like, even if the second Death Star had been successful, would it still have been more effective than a fleet of TIE Defenders? I don't know.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
I think the interesting question here is, did Arinda Price destroy the Empire?
Oh my god!
In her wanting to get a quick win in killing Kanan, and in her defense, trying to kill the rest of the Ghost crew, but in killing Kanan.
Do not defend her. She is an idiot.
And wanting to get that quick win and being willing, because she knew she was going to sacrifice the factory for it, because the AT-AT driver wasn't going to fire. He would, like, try to stop her.
He's like, ma'am, there are a lot of fuel pods here, and if I blow this up, then the whole thing's going to blow up. And she's like, doing it anyway. He's like, okay, it's, yeah, like, I didn't, I'm just going to wipe the fingerprints off this button after I'm done.
And, like, obviously, Roger, like, Roger. Look, there's other people involved. Palpatine could have not used the Death Star in a risky attack. Or, like, not put enough stormtroopers down on Endor. Like, a whole number of things could have happened. But, like, the point being is that, like, the decision was made at several levels that the TIE Defender and the creation of smaller weapons was irrelevant. And it seems like that was not the right choice.
When in doubt, fucking listen to Thrawn.
I know, right? Like, I mean, oh my god, it's like the most Anakin thing, too, to, like, have the biggest gun as opposed to... Seriously! I mean, it's called the TIE Defender, and, you know, if we want to go back to, like, that old sports adage of defense wins championships, literally, it would have.
No, for real.
Like, I'm not even kidding. Also, and I'm completely serious about this, open call to anyone who has been involved in actual military strategy or is a scholar of military strategy. If you ever want to come on the show and talk about military strategy in Star Wars, what's effective and what's not, like, where either the Empire or the Rebellion are both tripped up, please, like, call me. Like, literally drop us a line on Twitter, because that would be the best.
Yep.
I've literally been looking for someone to do this for us for a little while now, and I'm not sure who to ask who would be down, but if you are, please.
Yeah, we should be able to conjure someone up. I'll have to look.
It'd be fun.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
But, and also, like, Pandian is so, he's got his heart on for his one Super Star Destroyer. Like, how many more Super Star Destroyers and entire fleets could they have built with just the money from the second Death Star alone? Like, the first Death, like, look, I'll give you the first Death Star. It was in development for a really long time. That kind of power is, you know, really seductive.
And also, if not for Galen Erso, like, It would have blown up Yavin, yeah.
Yeah, it would have blown up Yavin and ended the rebellion, and who knows how long it would have controlled the galaxy. So the first Death Star, it still wasn't necessarily a good idea, but I get it. But then coming away from that epic humiliation and having your takeaway be, let's build it again.
With the, all the no-dunium left in the galaxy, but whatever.
Yeah, with all the no-dunium left, and maybe that's why it wasn't finished. Like, but let's not have any physical barriers between people who want to blow this up and the reactor core.
Yeah, like, what like, the hell?
Just build a wall. Like, literally just put a fucking dunium door. Put a fucking blast door in there.
Just put a tarp around it.
Like, close the blast doors so that the Millennium Falcon crashes into the blast doors and can't even get to the fucking rear. Like, how hard is that?
God damn it, guys.
They're very dim about this. I want, like, 5 books or so about just, like, having to try to explain to Palpatine that there's no dunium left.
Oh my god. I would read
the shit out of that.
Wait, listen.
Or just like a short story. 5 books seems a little much.
I was about to say, if I ever achieve Chris's dream for me, not necessarily my dream, of becoming an actual Star Wars author, I'm totally writing that short story. It's going to be ridiculous.
Please, I want it.
Oh my gosh.
Like, can you imagine?
I just...
Like, sir, I don't know if you remember, but we had a whole other Death Star, and now we don't have any dunium left.
Man, Fozzie Bear's turned dark.
This is,
I know.
Fozzie Bear's got force-choked to death and is gone now, but thank you, everybody. speaking of the Emperor, so I had a question, that's kind of been this recurring question for me. Throughout my deeper dive into Star Wars. So basically the life of this podcast. And this might be a stupid question, but we hear over and over again that basically nobody except for Vader himself knew that Palpatine was also a Sith Lord. Like, at a certain point, like, you're the Emperor and you're in charge of the galaxy and you can murder whomever you want, at least at the height of the Empire. Why continue to hide the fact that you're a Force user? Because, you know, Vader sure didn't, and he just, I don't know, ran around doing fucking Force murder all the time.
So much.
I mean, I think it's, why keep the Senate, right? Like, they kept the Senate for 19 years. Like, I think it's... Part of it's just keeping up appearances. I think it's easier.
Okay.
Like, it's easier. Like, you know, like, you're starting negotiations with some new planet. Hi, I'm the Emperor. I'm a Sith Lord. It's no big deal. Let's talk about your dunium. Like...
Okay, but, like, you know, everyone knew that Vader was, you know, I think a term... or a phrase that people use a lot is that Vader's quote-unquote on Palpatine's leash. Why would they think that some normal-ass bozo from Naboo was able to control someone as crazy scary, let's be for real, as Darth Vader?
They don't know from their perspective that Vader's human, though.
So?
I mean, look, I'm not disagreeing with you. I think it is a bit of a plot hole.
I'm sorry, I have to ask these questions because it's me.
No. I think your point's well taken, but... I think it's just easier for... Because I remember, the story that Palpatine told when he came to power is that the Jedi tried to take over and he defeated the Jedi. And it's easier to say, I have my one enforcer who, you know, is magic. And and also, to be fair, it's not... It's like, it's an open secret, but it's still a secret that Vader, like... is a Sith Lord. Like, he's... I don't think that's known. I think it's known that he murders everybody and is basically unkillable. But at least... And we'll read Lords of the Sith at some point. But at least in Lords of the Sith, his, like, use of the Force is kind of shocking to everybody.
Okay, but then I mean, maybe this doesn't line up anymore because, you know, canon gets a little smushy after a while. But... I mean, we know from Rebels that people knew about the Inquisitors, at least, and they weren't as cool as Vader. Like, Cal's knew about the Inquisitors. So what the fuck?
I think it's just keeping up appearances. Like, I think it's a plot hole, and the answer is just keeping up appearances.
I mean, as you know, I am a person who literally doesn't understand what the point of keeping up appearances is, and will tell people to go fuck themselves to their face. So, like, I just don't understand this.
I know, it makes life really easy sometimes.
Love you.
I think it was just, like, a political play. I think Palpatine was not shielded in the least from, like, everybody's salty-ass feelings towards Darth Vader, like, even within the ranks of his own military, right? Like, everybody's like, Vader, you crazy. and I think Palpatine's like, in order to be, like, stay a relatable guy who is hungry for power, just like everybody else in this galaxy, I need to stay relatable. Like, people need to be like, oh yeah, it's just this normal fucker. And then he's got his little, like, mask person with a cape.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same
mask reason. Person with a cape.
It's the same reason he has his propaganda, where person he's, like, the kindly old grandfather figure, right? Like,
that's true.
Like, it's just keeping up appearances so that he's the everyman still.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was my take.
Okay.
Not hot take.
Well.
That was my Luke take. Lukewarm take. Oh, my God. I can't even use words anymore.
Your Luke warm take.
Yep.
All right. And on that note.
And wait, everybody get ready. I'm quitting the pod.
Okay. On that
take
note.
A shot.
Thank you all for listening to episode 43 of the Book Wars pod. We have a few announcements to make.
First of all, this is coming out on. Yeah, this is coming up for AwesomeCon. I can say it.
It is.
Yeah, okay. So for those of you who are in the Washington, D.C. area and who want to come out, we are, in fact, going to be at AwesomeCon, and we are going to be presenting a panel. I'm going to be sitting in on a panel. It'll be great. It'll be a lot of fun. We've got some free stuff to give away, as generally as a part of the Tashi Station Network, if you come to our panel. So if that's any incentive for you to shell out for a ticket, then definitely do that. And also, John Boyega is going to be there, and you know, I'm going to be sitting in a corner dying. So
not at our panel, though. I wish.
Yeah, I wish. Anyway, AwesomeCon has a whole bunch of Star Wars panels, a whole lot of great appearances, including, of course, John Boyega, the original actor who played Boba Fett, and. Oh, I don't know how to say his name because it's Scandinavian.
Eunice.
Thank you. Eunice Otamo, who is now playing Chewbacca, and he's awesome. They're all going to be making appearances. Anyway, if you want more information about what time panels and Q&A sessions are, or generally just more information about the con, definitely go to awesome-con.com. And if you go to awesome-con.com/Star-Wars, you will find the complete schedule and all of the super cool details about that.
We'll post a link in the description.
Yeah, I'm only gonna be tweeting about it nonstop in the week leading up to it, so don't worry, I'm sure you'll see it.
Yeah, and if you do come, you're in the DC area and you do come say hi, tell us you listen, tell us how you like found out about the pod. We would love to talk to you.
Oh yeah, I mean, people are so intimidated by us, and I'm just like, I literally sit on the floor in my pajamas with like not real pants on and do nothing all day. So like, I'm just a Star Wars fan like you, and
puts her non pants on one leg at a time.
I sure do, Chris. So you know, definitely come say hi. We don't bite usually unless you're an asshole, in which case I'll just start.
Unless you're me and Kate's drunk, in which case she will bite you.
That is true. Also, unless you're a sexist asshole, in which case I'll definitely start screaming at you and make it banned from the con for life, but it'll be worth it.
Oh, so that was metaphorical bite. I mean, literally, Kate gets bitey when she's drunk.
That's true.
Sorry, that's neither here nor there, except it's a cry for help.
Jesus Christ. Unfortunately, Kiki's not going to be there because she's all the way in Portland and planes cost money, but... You know, Chris and I will be there.
So much money in the spring to fly to DC, which is totally not surprising at all.
Yeah,
but I know.
Go see them because I can't, please.
Yeah.
Yeah, come see us. Come see some of our friends and colleagues from Tashi Station. We're going to be on a panel with Brian Larson of Tashi Station, and Swara Saleh of Beltway Banthas.
Indeed.
So if you are fans of either of the Tashi Station Network, which you should be, or Beltway Banthas podcast, which you also should be, they'll be there as well. So come say hi. We would love to talk to you.
Absolutely.
Other news today, as we recorded this, so a few days ago, for all of you listening, Del Rey released the first excerpt from Thrawn Alliances coming out this July, and we're all super hyped for it.
Oh my god! Love Thrawn.
Anyway, next episode, we're going to be talking about Aftermath chapter 18 through 28, so the next quarter or so of the book. In the meantime, hit us up on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Tumblr at BookWarsPod. BookWarsPod@gmail.com if you want to email us. And please, please, especially going into AwesomeCon, where people are going to be wanting to learn more about the pod and what we do, if you listen to the pod and you enjoy it, please rate, review, and subscribe to us and to the Tashi Station Radio Mega Feed on iTunes, on Stitcher, and on Google Play. It is the best way for people to discover the show, and there are going to be people looking for the pod and wanting to know if it's good. So if you could do that, we would really appreciate it. And if you come up to us at the panel and tell us that you have reviewed us, you will be our absolute favorite person.
Also,
yes, please.
I may or may not wrestle Chris into giving away some stuff. We'll see.
We'll see. No, yes, we will give you a thing.
Yeah. If you're the first person who comes up to us and shows us your review, we'll give you a thing.
Yes. Can't promise it'll be a big thing, but it'll be a thing.
It'll be a little thing. It'll be fun.
People love things.
Yeah. They do. They sure do.
You can get a selfie with us.
You totally can.
I'm so jealous.
Anyway, in the meantime, if you are so inclined and have the ability, donate to the Tashi Station Radio Patreon. It helps us cover our hosting and production costs for the podcast. Our theme song is Whiz Bang by Poddington Bear. Our logo and artwork are by Joe Butera Design. Thank you, as always, for listening to the Book Wars Pod, and we'll talk to you next week.
Chuck Wendigo, if you're listening, we're so sorry.
Love you, Chuck.
Because they're horrible people. Anyway.
Probably going to do it at a fucking Outback Steakhouse.
Oh my god, dude, shut up.
No rules, just right.